Hey everybody, C-Note here, and welcome to C-Note's Media Madness. I don't have any quippy thing yet for this show. I don't like a tagline. If you could think of a tagline that I should bring into this show, like, I don't know, the show that'll save all of the puppies in the world or something like that. I don't know, maybe I'll just come up with a new one every episode like I'm doing with Dopamine. But yeah, today on the show, I've got a really great interview with Sydney Wong from VentureX and all of the things that she's learned from all of her time in Silicon Valley. She spent a lot of time learning about user experience, about people, about the way that tech companies are getting funding and basically coming up with metrics and ways for startups to kind of get a sense of when they're ready for gaining capital and pitching their product. So that's really what VentureX is about. That's the company that she works for. And just giving you a heads up that there is a promo code for VentureX, so VentureX.ca. And if you sign up for their product, which is an app that will help you to track all of your progress, you can put in the promo code CNOTE, capital C-N-O-T-E, all capital letters, and you will get your first month for free. So do that, and you'll be supporting the podcast and Sydney Wong, who has been great to talk to. You're going to learn a lot from this episode about everything that she has been involved with when it comes to Silicon Valley. We talk about tech startups. We talk about everything that is going into the way the market is now in terms of some things being oversaturated and how that involves a different approach, and talk a little bit about the future and some of the industries that could use a little bit of help. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Sydney Wong to the show. Okay, Sydney Wong, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this is great. You're my first guest on this show, which I just launched a few weeks ago, so this is really exciting.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, this is a little bit more of a media-focused show, so tell me a little bit about yourself and why you're here.
So I'm a female tech entrepreneur, and I have a very unique story where basically, after I graduated from my master's in Paris, I came back to Canada, which is where I am now. And I wanted to try something new. I wanted to do something in the entrepreneurship world. And a friend of mine from California said, if I was very serious about learning more about tech and startup, then I got to go to move to Silicon Valley. So I did. I bought a one-way ticket within about 10 days of him telling me this, and I moved in with him. I presume that was an invitation. Right. And so I just stayed there and until my visa ran out, then I came back. But I learned a lot about tech and startup, and I really took the opportunity day by day because I knew my stay was going to be short. So I talked to every single Uber driver I could. I talked to every dog walker on WAG. I talked to every housekeeper on TaskRabbit to understand what they were doing, where their goals were, what their backgrounds were. And I really wanted to learn why that was the pivotal hub of startup and entrepreneurship and how they get so much worldly exposure to everything else in terms of what they're doing, where their mission is, and how they're getting there. And the how they're getting there part was the part that interested me the most. They always had a goal and a structure and a roadmap. They always had a reason and a kind of a ends to a means, means to an end, you know?
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting. So I wanted to bring that kind of startup structure back to Canada. So I did, and I built out a platform that is called VentureX. So that's the name of the company. And what it does is that it helps best prepare, connect, and close funding deals for early stage startup companies, because we found that over 90% of startups fail in their first year. And they don't know how to get to the next step, and they're always having trouble with funding because it turns out that's nobody's actual specialty.
Right.
And in terms of the investors, they are being over-solicited by entrepreneurs that are unprepared. So I wanted to make that gap close a bit more in order to have more successful startups in the future. So that's kind of how our mission all collides into one. I myself came from a marketing automation background. So I'm very interested in technology. And when I finished my master's, my MBA in Paris, automation and technology was the only means of marketing that was really growing where I was. And so that's kind of how I got into, you know, that side of marketing by accident, really.
Right. And it seems like this, that it's not even just Silicon Valley these days, that it's starting to expand to different parts of the country, whether that's for tax incentives, whether it's, you know, whatever reasons there are, really different parts of the world, and including what you're doing. I'm sure there are plenty of others who are doing something, I shouldn't say similar, but attempting their own version of trying to get Silicon Valley out of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Essentially. So what kind of businesses have you been starting to work with and see come out of, you know, different parts of the world? Because obviously with Silicon Valley, and you were saying everyone has their own reasons essentially for starting a different business. They see a problem and they find a way to fix it. What other problems and industries do you see starting to bloom through what you're doing or in other parts of the world?
So that's a great question. So we work with startups from every industry because it does cater to the kinds of investors that we have. Mm-hmm. We do have a focus on those that are looking for between $25,000 to $2 million in preferably the tech space or the scalable business model space. Because right. we work mainly with venture capitalists, that is what they tend to prefer, you know, to be able to have that, you know, 10x return or more.
Right.
And so we do work with more of those kinds of models. And you're absolutely right in terms of why people have certain missions. It does become very personal to them. A lot of the time it does come, it does boil down to the fact that they had a problem and they weren't able to solve it. So they built something in order to solve it.
Right.
So some of the more interesting ones I got to say would be the trend towards crowdsourcing information. Mm-hmm. So. Right. Back, you know, way back when the internet started, everything was about research base, you know, secondary research, quantitative mm-hmm. research, all of those different kinds of research to find information, to find answers. And then the new realms of reviews, of the Yelps of the world, the Ubers of the world, all of these things provide real people opinions on things right. and real people information on things. And so crowdsourcing information is a huge, huge trend, I gotta say. And it's still growing now. I think the big app that that went through acquisition fairly recently in the recent years was Waze, you know, the driving app.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with its navigation potential or its technology. It really has to do with the fact that people, everyday people, you and I, put in information in there mm-hmm. that is then spread to everywhere else in the world, right?
Right.
So going back to media and exposure and things like that, everyone can be their own media company because their information, their opinion is worth so much more than, you know, an article here, an article there, because all that crowdsourced information is what brings the truest value to a lot of the great startups that we've seen, whether it's in AI, blockchain, virtual reality, wearable tech, all of those industries, yes, are currently startups and within Venture X. And the more interesting ones, I've got to say, has to have some sort of crowdsourcing information in order to help predict trends in the future.
Yeah, it's really you know, large quantitative ways of predicting and measuring human behavior. It's super fascinating. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
and it seems like one of the commonalities that at least I've noticed in successful apps, you think about Uber and Waze and things like that. Really, those are two good examples of two things that are both doing the same and different things at the same time. So like Uber mm-hmm. is essentially selling time,
yeah.
You know, but yeah. it's also, there's a ton of information that is coming out of the usage of the app and where people are going and things like that. And
yeah.
then, you know, Waze, you know, being, I think they were acquired by Google or they obtained some information, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it was about the collection of the data
yes.
that you're exactly talking about. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any other quantity of something that can be sold or has been sold in an app, or I guess what I should say is like, where do you think startups and particularly apps and tech are going based on the trends that we've seen?
So a lot of great apps are built out of what's called open source libraries.
Right.
So these are basically, you can copy paste, alter code and things like that. So a lot of things are very standardized now. You can build apps faster than you ever can before.
Right.
That is a huge market. When we build certain features and things like that, we look for the easiest integrations we can. So for our app, for example, we use something called Stripe. So that is a very that's very popular among startups because it helps us build payment systems super fast.
Right.
Because everything is already like laid out there, and they have a massive support for developers, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the ways that in terms of trends, looking for open source, looking for things that are integrations, looking for things that are fast and easy, because right. speed is a startup's only variable to success. You will never be able to compete on resources, people, or money, right?
Right.
So you gotta go with whatever is fastest, whatever is cheapest, and whatever is in front of you.
Right.
And so that is a huge, huge trend to do it. The more unique you can build your intellectual property and your business and your, you know, proprietary material, which brings us back to the whole crowdsourcing information thing, people's real opinions, people's ability to voice their opinions, and their ability to, in their own way, market themselves, right? Because everything that you say and do is you at the end of the day. And so those are very unique variables that when you're thinking about being acquired, you're thinking about really flipping the company for a, you know, major sell. Mm-hmm. These are the things that it really boils down to. Because in terms of a lot of the technology, if you are using a lot of integrations, you're using a lot of things that everyone uses, you have to do something else that stands out.
Right. Absolutely. And to kind of go back to what some of the things you were saying about like speed and doing things very quickly, I'm sure there is pressure from investors to do things quickly as well. And they're constantly asking, where's the product? Where's the product?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have like our platform, what it does right now is that we built out a fully for the startup side. In terms mm-hmm. of the investor side, of course, they want better tracking. They want better monitoring. They want, you know, to be hands-on, but have technology support that instead, because mm-hmm. it's very, very manual and tedious right now.
Right.
So some investors, they like to go through, you know, different milestones. So when you hit this milestone of your product as quickly as possible, that's when we will unleash this next amount of funding. So right. in order for them to get there, you know, they have to come up with estimated deadlines, estimated milestones at the beginning. Make sure it's realistic for you, because you can build as quickly as possible, but there will also be bugs, there will also be crashes, there will also be resets and different things that come up along the way. So in order to keep your investors happy and to keep the money flowing in, even you're not going to get your $1 million on day one, generally.
Right.
You're going to mm-hmm. get them in parts. So you want to make sure that you are building in the most efficient way possible, and that is how you can keep your cash flow going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and would you say that's what you guys are essentially helping businesses and teaching businesses to be able to do? Because I'm sure the misconception is that, you know, they would get all of that money at once, or not even know how to get that money, or if they assume that that's what would happen, is that they would get all this money and then they would have all this time to do stuff. And it seems like you guys are able to kind of bring things into, you know, realistic understanding of how the process is.
Yeah, absolutely. So we try and lay things out, you know, as plainly as possible. I think that knowledge is power in today's world. And the more you know, the better you are in a position to negotiate, the better you are in a position to plan for your future, and the better you are to lead your internal team, you know, towards your mission on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So one of the unique features that we have, for example, is industry benchmarks. In real time, you'll be able to know within your industry mm-hmm. Where you truly stand in terms of, do I have the highest conversion or do I have the highest engagement? So
right.
for example, if you were a food delivery service, which I know in your city and mine, we have like 4,000 of them.
Right.
so many. And you know what? Another great example of the out of the box, you know, integration, which is super easy to build
mm-hmm.
because you can just copy what someone else already built.
Right.
So for example, you want high engagement scores. You don't need as much conversion scores though. You can have low conversion and high engagement because you want the same customer to be ordering food over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point, right? But if you only have one customer that orders, you know, one dish and then never orders again, and then you have another one in 3 weeks that orders something else, that's really bad. it could be the same amount of money, but that looks really bad. So you can tell if your food delivery within the industry benchmarks is doing higher or lower than the average for engagement, for example. So really knowing where you stand helps best prepare you when you go into that pitch, because you really are the top, you know, the top 1%. You already know that going in. You might want to adapt your pitch deck that way, and it might give you an edge, right? And so that's one thing of making sure that you are the most prepared. The other thing that you touched base on, which was talking about how difficult it was, or maybe they don't know how difficult it is, that unknown gray area is very interesting that I started to learn, which is kind of like a kid thinks that math class is really hard, but he hasn't started math class.
Right.
But he thinks it's really hard. Because he heard it from someone else.
Right.
You know, or he read it on the internet or something.
Right.
So that is kind of crazy how a lot of people have this huge fear of starting. You gotta start to know if it's hard or not. And then when it's hard, you have to find out why it's hard.
Yeah, you gotta start to gain new information to figure out what to do next.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the piece of the puzzle that's really interesting when I have discussions with anyone who's trying to start anything. You know, it's the fear of the unknown, but it's also like, it's almost rewiring your brain to be excited about the unknown, because like revealing the unknown is what will get you to the next thing.
Because we're still in a society where we're so afraid of failure. Unknown includes failure.
Right. And I'm sure it's a different case when you're dealing with investors, large amounts of money, and you're trying to get to a place where, you know, you want to be the next Uber or something like that. And, you know, realistically, it's not, you know, it seems like, and you can correct me on this, it seems like, you know, the trophy is not as large as it used to be, meaning the market is becoming more saturated with different kinds of apps. And like you were saying, you have to figure out what your major sell is, and people are able to open source different kinds of, you know, like you were saying, the delivery service app, like there's a bunch of them. So it's like finding ways to at least become sustainable and not necessarily become the next overnight success. Would that be accurate in terms of the realistic perspective that these startup companies should be approaching with these days?
Absolutely. The market definitely has changed a lot since the Facebooks, Ubers, Airbnbs have all come out, and they've had enormous success. You know, no one can deny that they have enormous success, and they inspire all these generations of great entrepreneurs, which is fantastic.
Right.
What we're seeing right now, based on our research, for example, during our first year, was that each person at an investment firm, doesn't matter the size of the investment firm, it seems, they get over 200 applications. Each person, it doesn't even matter what their job is.
Right.
And generally their job is not looking at applications. They get 200 applications from startups per year for funding.
Right.
And that is insane. And so that's why the investors have been explaining, okay, we are over-solicited by startups that are unprepared. This is why. And that to me is insane, because actually even getting 200 and going through the due diligence of all of them, it would take you a year at least. And so knowing realistically who you're up against is kind of one of the things that I can tell most first time startups really don't take into consideration is that funding is out there for sure. It's also limited. You have to put yourself in the best position to go out there and do it. You have to have the best team to go out there and do it. If you've never done it before, go with somebody who has done it before. Ask people, you know, ask questions. And that's what's really going to really launch you forward. You know, gone are the days that you would write something on a napkin and get funding for an idea. Mm-hmm. Investors now, you know, have higher standards, criteria, requirements, whatever you want to call it, to really open up their, not just their bank accounts, but also their resources, their connections, and their strategic help. Are you looking to get into IPO, or are you looking to get to mergers and acquisitions? You know, they will help you with all of these things, but you got to make sure that you have all your ducks in order and know what the funding is really for.
Yeah, the sell is definitely harder than it used to be, especially with how the market is. And, you know, maybe there will be another wave of something. Maybe maybe somebody will finally figure out smartwatches or whatever the next thing is. And, you know, that'll be a big explosion of something that'll make investing easier. But at this point, you know, with everything being so saturated and with everything having been basically so streamlined at this point, streamlined is probably not the best word, but basically investors are more intelligent about what they want to see out of tech companies, that it just involves more to get in the door. So that totally makes sense. Let's kind of jump around to my notes here, but have you heard of any interesting ideas that didn't really work out that you personally at least felt was something that was so sure to, you know, whether it's something someone that's worked with you or not, you know, something that you thought was a cool idea, but no one ever really did anything with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, this has more to do with not just timing, you know how they say it's all about timing.
Right.
It also has to do with the place. So one of the apps that I really wanted to invest in when I was living in Silicon Valley, and then I realized, oh, you need this as a minimum. I guess I can do that. Oh, and you also need to be an American citizen, whatever. And so one of the apps I really wanted to invest in was a TaskRabbit. So this is a great application worth about $10 billion or something.
Right.
And you basically hire people to do random chores for you, right? So pick up laundry and clean your house or things like that. So I was like, this is so cool. And one of my Uber drivers told me about it. You can learn a lot from your Uber drivers, man. So much. They know it. They're the only locals.
Right.
They really know everything.
Yep.
And so this this Uber driver told me about it, and he told me about all the different chores that he's done. And so I wanted to invest in it because I'm like, this is amazing.
Right.
And then I'm like, why don't we have this in Canada? And this is kind of where the different economies, different location, different culture kind of comes in.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have like the 1% of yuppies, I would say. So young professionals of a certain age group being the 1% of income,
right?
You know, breadwinner. It, here in Canada, the same way is kind of like everyone's in middle class, you know?
Right.
Whereas like when I was in Silicon Valley, it was difficult to find what the middle class was. That was really confusing for me.
Right.
And so that's why those apps really worked, because they had people generally the same age, some making well above, you know, the average, and some making way below the average. My best friends, I have two best friends. One used to work for Apple for 5 years, so you know which bracket he was in. The other one was a high school teacher, and she had every app on her phone that brought secondary income. And so that's, depending on where it would work, was a big thing too. And it tells you a lot of, you know, watching the economies of other markets and seeing if they would work in your country or not. So that's a fantastic idea. I wanted to invest in it. It did not work here. They tried it here many times, and it did not work here.
Yeah.
For several reasons, but mostly it was because we didn't have the same kind of market here.
Yeah, and we're starting to see more granular ideas, more location specific or age specific or demographic specific, whatever the case may be, of different kinds of apps and tech usage. One of the things that has stuck out to me as a space that Apple and, you know, Google, a lot of the big players are trying to get into is healthcare. Have you seen? You know, have you worked with any healthcare companies or anyone that's trying to do some interesting stuff in healthcare?
So healthcare is one of those things that are so different and difficult to scale and expand for a couple of reasons.
Right.
You don't know which of them have which kinds of laws and policies that would make it slow to expand, right? They would have to fight basically very similar things that Uber had to fight, except even more complex because they are different in each state. They're not the same battle in each state. You can't use the same arguments with every government agent, for example, because there's different laws. It's very difficult to expand and scale up in those ways. And then, of course, in Canada, we have free healthcare.
Right.
And so that's also different. So if you were to expand in Canada, it's basically you go against the government, and they in order to kind of keep a lot of government workers and things like that, that is very tied to healthcare as opposed to other industries.
Right.
You got to make sure that you are appealing to the fact that we are creating jobs, not taking them away because of this, this, and this.
Right.
So one of the great companies that pitched recently was wearable tech. So this wearable tech functionality was very interesting. It's kind of like if you were to have a Fitbit,
mm-hmm.
except instead of just monitoring your heart and everything, you can actually use hand gestures for everything. It was like one of those, he sent me an example that was really fun. It was kind of like one of those like Tom Cruise movies.
Minority Report.
Yeah, like expand your hand and then like windows come up and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And so healthcare was one of the great sectors that that he wanted to expand into. He was also talking to clients in the space industry as well as social media industry. And so we just helped him pitch for $500,000 here. Mm-hmm. I finished up at Techstar, so fantastic candidate. And I'm really excited to see where he goes. And I can understand and sympathize why healthcare would be kind of a third tier for him.
Right.
Whereas space and social media was really like his bread and butter at the very beginning. And I thought that was great and fantastic. I myself would love to see more in healthcare. Personally, I have spent more than 10 and a half hours waiting in the ER room. I mean, to be fair, it was a checkup and it was Friday the 13th, so it's probably not the best day.
Mm-hmm.
But 10 and a half hours, I would love to see anything different.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would like to see anything that seems to be, you know, that is or seems to be government controlled be much more streamlined, to use the ideas of user experience and, private funding to find ways to make things, easier, for people to, everyone's got a phone, nearly everyone's got a phone these days.
Yeah.
So that creates the perfect opportunity. But there's fear. And really the point of me asking that question was so that you could point out that, there's fear in every industry, there's different obstacles to overcome. And, that's the benefit of someone who's trying to start up something, to work with a company like you and yours that is, that has experience in all of these different areas and can ask the right questions.
Yeah.
And why it's interesting to talk to you about this stuff. So you brought up Minority Report and, in a lot of ways there are some aspects of that movie and some aspects of that basically like free floating user interfaces and stuff like that mm-hmm. are like the dream future that I kind of want. Like I'm really tired of staring at my phone. I really want things that feel a little bit more integrated into my life and I'm fine. Yeah. I would be totally fine having that. Do you have your own version of where you'd like the future to go, whether it be something like that or apps or anything?
I would like to see definitely a lot of changes in sectors that are painful. So I like to know everything in a macro instead of, things in micro, mm-hmm. Sessions. So, for example, one of the startups that just signed on with us, he is doing something I think fantastic. It's a problem that I personally am not familiar with because I'm in Canada. So he's an American, young entrepreneur who started an application that would help connect students and educators and employers. So there is definitely a huge gap there, and the consequence of it is having massive student debt, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that is very unique to the U.S. because I don't believe that anyone else actually has the same kinds of things. Yeah. But Canada only has like 10% of the American population. So solving one problem in the U.S. is like incredible for us through our eyes. And so I'm like, this is amazing. So basically, the mission is, what do the employers want and how can we reverse engineer it to make sure that the students, young people, are not going through massive debt, but they have access to certain online education, training programs, licensing certifications. Like for when I did marketing automation, I had to do license certification every single year. If you're a tax accountant, you have to do the same thing. If you're a CFA, you have to do your certifications, right?
Right.
But understand what the requirements are when you are about to enter this particular sector of the job market, instead of going through massive student debt that you cannot pay off, and really understanding your end goal and working with those employers, those educators in that sector to work backwards to make sure that you are on the right path every step of the way. And this is an amazing app and an application that we are in the process of getting funding for.
Yeah, that sounds pretty amazing because, you know, I relate to that intensely. I think a lot of young Americans can relate to the student loan debt situation.
Yeah.
And it's very maddening, especially since, you know, we're brought into it at like 17, 18 years old when we graduate high school and we're expected to make this big financial life decision or expect our parents to subvert their own ideals of what their child wants and you know, have no problem committing to $120,000 for 4 years because of the desire for a better future for their kid, but don't fully grasp and understand what's going on or have a real path from A to Z, which is like, you know, signing on the dotted line and then, you know, having assistance to really get a job, you know, at the end of the process and really work through it all. Anyway, everybody knows what that's like, and to improve that would be a massive, massive help to a lot of people in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love his mission. I love his app. And I think that it's going to do great things.
Fantastic. So you did one last question, unless others come up. You mentioned, we talked a little bit about meeting numbers. When someone is about to pitch something, they've been collecting data by, you know, beta testing, putting their app out there, things like that. They're collecting numbers and you're trying to see if you're meeting the numbers of the industry at minimum. Mm-hmm. What is typically one of the first things that you guys would do if you see someone is not meeting their numbers? What kinds of questions would you ask them, or what would you suggest to them to look at? Is it user experience? Is it collecting more data? What would you guys suggest to someone who is trying to improve those numbers?
So one of the things is this really big buzzword. So I wrote it, this one of my first Medium articles actually, and it's also on our YouTube channel. So We have something called product market fit that keeps on buzzing around Silicon Valley. So what is product market fit? It is how your product or service is resonating with your actual target market. Mm-hmm. So if it's not resonating enough and your target market fit score, which is one of our metrics, is low, then your conversion and your engagement scores will be low because you found the wrong target.
Right.
Your target has to go through a sales cycle called BANT. So BANT is budgeting, authority, need, and timing. So if your target market does not meet all of those requirements, or the need is just not high enough, then you need to change it. So in terms of, I'm throwing a lot of like overhead, like business school kind of theories out here.
Bring it.
So in terms of the life cycle of the business, you of course will find your early adopters first, right?
Right.
And you'll find your early majority and then your, you know, late majority, things like that. But if you're only finding late majority when you're first going out there to do your market research, you're going out there to try and get pre-orders, you're going out there to launch your crowdfunding campaign, whatever the case may be, and you're only finding people who are like, yeah, maybe, I kind of like it. And then what you hear is, this is amazing, I must have it now. Your idea is the only one I will ever think of for the rest of my life.
Right.
Then there's a bit of dissonance there. So what I would suggest is, of course, you can change your target market. That is one of the things that tools like ours would help you track. Mm-hmm. Whether you're getting closer or further away from target market fit just means if your numbers are going up or down. So that's pretty basic. The other thing that you could do is to bring someone else, not preferably not in your company, to come and do these kinds of user sessions with you. So user experience, understanding it, and user feedback, market research. So these are the different stages and different kinds of activities that you can get someone else to come with you, whether it be a coach, a consultant, a friend, anyone, because they will help you be a second pair of ears to make sure that what you are hearing is really aligned with what you're putting in to reports, or what you really believe is true, right?
Right.
A lot of people do fall into the cycle of being too in love with their idea, being mm-hmm. too close to the product, and all of these things. And you have to fall in love with your mission first, right. not your product, you know? Right. even if you're the one building your product, because it might not be for the right market. And so that's kind of where the disconnect comes from. And those are two of the ways that I would personally recommend you should definitely be looking at. If you need more information on how that works, so you can check out, of course, our Medium blog on product market fit. Mm-hmm. But one of the unique services that we do offer currently, it's a limited time service, is that we offer free health checks every month for any subscribed active user. So we can actually see if their numbers are getting high or low.
Right.
Eventually, one of the things that we are currently building in is like notifications for if the numbers kind of fall too low, we would then be able to prompt them the right direction. But right now we have personalized calls every single month in order to make sure that their numbers are at par and it's still growing, or if it's not growing, what resources do you need that we can provide you from our team?
Right. Okay. That's fantastic. Oh, that's really great. I think there's been a lot of really great information that people can, you know, think about. And definitely if they fall within your target market, we'll send them your way. So can you give people a sense of, A, who would you like to come to your website, and give people a sense of where they can get a hold of you or the company?
Absolutely. So if you are a startup looking for funding in this pre-seed, seed, or Series A round, up to $2 million, please come and visit us at www.venturex.ca. That's VENTURX.ca. To get a hold of us, there is a contact us form directly on the website.
Fantastic. Well, be sure to mention dopamine if you hear about it through us. This is, or not dopamine, sorry, I'm mixing my podcasts now. C-Notes Media Madness. that's what happens when you start two podcasts. But yeah, thank you so much, Cindy Wong, for being on the show. I really appreciate you. This has been a really great conversation. And I look forward to chatting again in the future.
Thank you so much, Christian.
Fantastic. See you guys. Hey, everybody, just a quick reminder that if you go to venturex.ca, VENTURX.ca, and go into the promo code on checkout and add CNOTE, CNOTE, all capital letters, and you will get the first month for free as you start to learn what it takes to build your tech platform in a way that will get you the best chance at funding. And you can work with VentureX to get all that figured out. So again, VentureX.ca, VENTURX.ca, with promo code CNOTE on checkout. Hey guys, I really appreciate you listening to this episode of CNOTES Media Madness. If you really liked what you heard, please go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. Leave a positive review. Let me know if there's anything that I can improve, or you know how this has affected you. So if you've had a good response to the conversation, have any questions, please leave a review and a comment, and I will happily get back to you as soon as I can. My other show is called Dopamine, which is mental health for creatives and entrepreneurs. So please check that out at dopamine.life. You can also check out me personally at HiMyNameIsChristian.com. You can learn more about all of the consulting and tutelage that I do in tech and design and Myers-Briggs identity consulting, things like that. And then CNOTE.media is the place to go to learn more about my media services, graphic design, video, podcasting, things like that. And lastly, I wanted to let you guys know that I am working on a podcast course that is currently up for pre-sale until June 8th. Which is going to be 8 to 10 hours of fantastic video of me talking about everything that I know about podcasting that I've learned in the past year, everything that I know about media translated into that, as the things, you know, media hasn't changed for a very long time. It's a marketing tool. It's a way to connect with people. And I want to share how to help you be able to do that and use Anchor as your platform. And, you know, all of the things that you need to think about to put into a podcast. So I'll give you the, I'll update this with the link to where that's going to be. But if you are interested, go to paypal.me/rivalmydesign, make a $2.99 payment, leave your name and your email address. And then from there, I'll be able to add you to the email list. Make sure that you get the course as it stands right now, which is about 2 hours recorded. And you'll get updates as we go along, until the June 8th date where I should be done with everything, and you'll get the entire course and you'll have access to me, and it'll be amazing. So again, I appreciate you listening to this podcast, and I hope you guys have a good one. Take care of yourselves and each other.